Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey's here, and phase retirement's now actually going to happen after we've been talking about this for what, years?
2 years. 2 years, yeah.
And so finally we're going to see these happen. What do you think any potential stumbling blocks or problems or issues with execution might be for the agencies that are going to go hog into this and get started right away?
Probably any number of them out there, because anytime there's a change, any sort of personnel change in the federal government, you know, the devil is in the details. OPM, as you well know, was widely criticized for taking so long in doing this. But when you know the history of these kinds of things, and, you know, the fact that Congress will, and it does this all the time, Congress will pass a law that says eliminate poverty. Take care of that, gang.
Right,
and,
get on,
you know,
that.
Again, the details are there, or the devil's in the details. The thing with phased retirement is there's so many questions that have to be answered. How long is it going to last? Do they contribute to the thrift savings plan? At what rate? I mean, just it's endless. You know, you're chasing your tail on this kind of thing. It's supposed to start, be official in, I think, October or November 6th or 7th, something like that. But reality tells you that it's not going to be in effect until probably early to mid 2015. Bob Lines, who does the Your Benefit show, had Ray Kirk, former high official of OPM, on the other day, a couple of Mondays back, and the shows are archived so people can listen to them at their pleasure. It was an excellent primer. I mean, Ray Kirk wrote the book. He's the guy. And he went through it step by step and took us as far as we can go in the process. And I talked to him a little bit after the show. I was not on it, but I talked to him afterwards. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting program, and you don't know how widespread will it be. Well, I mean, what if everybody wants to take phased retirement?
Right.
It's an agency issue. It's up to them. But, you know, remember when buyouts first started, people said, okay, they'd walk in, they'd say, okay, give me a buyout, I'm leaving. And it didn't work that way. You know, a lot of people got them. So, again, the devil's in the details, but and we don't know how many people will take it, how many will be offered. What will that do to the retirement tsunami? Is that it's ready to be unleashed. Every year, the number of people who are eligible to retire in government increases fairly dramatically, so that you're going to have a point where as many as half the people in some offices will be eligible to retire. Do you let them all go the same day? Do you phase them in? The mentoring program, how does that work? I've even heard this. And I think I heard it on our radio show. I believe Tom Timman and Emily Kopp were talking about it. They had a guest. I think I'm correct in this. And I think he said there are something like 34 government definitions of what a mentor is.
Huh.
So how do you reconcile that?
Our friend Tammy Flanagan was on this program on Friday afternoon talking about some of the financial ramifications, potentially. Things about like TSP and leave and all of those kinds of things. And those seem to be fairly cut and dried. It appears that one of the benefits of this taking as long as it did is that OPM has really wrapped their arms around all those things and really has a good sense of where they're all headed.
I think that's true, yeah.
As we watch this happen over the next couple of years, do we have a way to figure that we can analyze it at some point in the future and say this worked the way we expected it to work, or...
That's an excellent question. I don't know. I mean, you could ask the same, really, of the buyout program.
Could you make something up?
Yes. I think it's going to be a complete disaster.
Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey's here, and your column on federalnewsradio.com today is headlined, "Enjoy Yourself, It's Later Than You Think." What does that mean?
Well, here we are. It's August 2014. We came off the... one of the worst winters in the East Coast that any of us can remember. Now we've had one of the best summers. You know, this life, as we know, is cyclical.
Yes.
This time last year, federal workers, hundreds of thousands of federal workers, had been furloughed without pay. It was so bad that FEA, the Federal Employee Emergency Assistance Fund, you know, Feds Helping Feds charity, went broke. They ran out of money to make people no-cost emergency loans. Then following that, you had a round of the government shutdown, the thing that the White House and Congress said could never happen, should never happen, and they let happen. And then you had that, and then in the wake of that, eventually some people took out unemployment insurance or applied for unemployment in their various states. And then finally the Congress had second thoughts and after a couple of weeks voted to pay the people for that time off. So the good way to look at it is they had two unplanned vacations, one paid, one unpaid. Mm-hmm. But people didn't know that they were going to be paid at the time. And I think maybe some people assumed that after the furloughs they would be paid, and they weren't. So, but it was a mess. And we were talking about layoffs, RIFs, furloughs, this kind of thing. This year, nothing, not mm-hmm. a peep. They've settled there's not going to be a shutdown because the shutdown would occur October 1. The elections are November. So neither party wants to risk it.
Right.
The political ramifications are just too great.
Yeah.
Could hurt both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Furloughs, no talk about that. You know, everything that was the issue du jour, and not only did we all talk about it, but it actually happened, you know, which often is not the case in Washington. Mm-hmm. This year, nothing. So enjoy yourself later than you think. Now, 2015, totally different story.
Mm.
The Obama administration, as an example, in 2013, the Obama administration endorsed a higher contribution rate for federal workers, that they would pay more for their retirement benefits. And it also endorsed the chained CPI concept, which means they'd use a different yardstick, if you will, to measure inflation. And as a result, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees estimates that the average current Fed over a 20-year lifetime period would lose something like $50,000. So mm-hmm. they would get $50,000 less in raises than they would under the new system. Republicans love this. Some Democrats do, but the White House endorsed it in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
They backed off this year. They said, nope, never heard of it.
Mm.
It's gone away because it's an election year. But 2015, we can almost guarantee it will be back, both sides pushing it. It's one of those things that would save the taxpayers a tremendous amount of money,
yep.
Not so much in the civil service and military area, but in Social Security. You know, one out of six Americans thereabouts gets Social Security. If you could shave $15,000 off of their future benefits, most people wouldn't know it, wouldn't mm-hmm. know it was happening, but the future savings would be tremendous. So it's a very attractive political idea, and that's just one of the things that's likely to come back.
You also write about the fact that it's been a bad public relations year for some federal employees. Internal Revenue Service, I'm going to talk to the commissioner of the IRS, John Koskinen, on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Patent and Trademark Office is having a rough time of it right now with their telework issues. Or at least perceived telework issues. Although that one strikes me as a little unusual because I talked to the leader of the Patent Examiners Union last mm-hmm. week. And when you combine what he said with the remarks by the Inspector General at the Commerce Department, Todd Zinsser, that one sounds, I don't want to say tempest in a teapot because people did things that they shouldn't have done. But it doesn't sound like anybody set out to cheat anybody in that particular one, in the telework one.
And the numbers are very small, too. A lot of these were whistleblower complaints, and it was maybe three or four.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's three or four too many, but it's not every examiner sitting at home, not doing his or her job.
Yeah.
And then the problem there is PTO, Patent and Trademark Office, is sort of the poster child for the teleworking movement. These are mostly high-level, very well-paid professionals, you know, the kinds of people that everybody would expect would honor this and do a good job. And then comes the front page
yeah.
above the fold Washington Post story that really gave them a black eye. I'll tell you another thing I think that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, and it has nothing to do, you don't have to be a sports fan or even particularly politically correct, but these three patent and trademark office judges who in effect told the Washington Redskins to get a new name.
Mm-hmm.
And that just strikes a lot of people as maybe you're a little off your turf there.
Yeah. The issue with telework at PTO, it strikes me that the major problem there is some of these people might actually be too good at their jobs. The Patent Trademark Office Union president told me The main issue there, and again, combined with the comments that the Commerce IG Todd Zinsser gave to Jason Miller, is you have, let's say, Causey comes along and he has very set goals mm-hmm. and mission that he has to perform. And in his 80 hours per pay period, if you finish that work in 60, mm-hmm. say your job is to examine 10 applications. I'm making these numbers
right.
up. But in that 80-hour pay period, you're supposed to do 10 examinations.
Mm-hmm.
If you're done with your 10 at 60 hours and your bosses are looking at your work and you're meeting your quality requirements too, what should you do for the other 20 hours? Should you do another examination and go to 11 instead of 10? Or should it be okay for you to say, well, my
and to have some downtime, yeah.
Yeah, my assignment was to do these 10 in this amount of time, and I did that, so I'm done. I'm good.
Right, because there's a lot of arguments about workaholics burning themselves out, maybe
right.
not being as productive. And I'll tell you an excellent example. I don't know how many people will remember the name Ross Perot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, self-made man. I think he's an Annapolis graduate. Self-made man, went to work for IBM or one of these companies. He hit his quota, I believe. I think he hit his annual quota in 1 month.
Jeez.
And he went back to them and said, what do I do? And they didn't quite know what to do with him, you know. And I forgot how it came out, but the bottom line is he became Ross Perot, you know, ran for president twice, ran very successfully the first time, got a good chunk of the vote, but a self-made guy. But he's an example of what you're talking about. What do you do with somebody who's that fast and that good?
Mm-hmm. Ross Perot graduated from the Naval Academy, and Wikipedia says that he helped to establish its honor system. So it's not like he didn't just show up.
Right, yeah.
He had a little bit of an impact while he was there, similar to where he was everybody
else. Amazing guy. And when some of his employees were taken hostage in Iran, he got them out on his own. You know, the U.S. government mounted this operation with the Canadians, the assistance of the Canadians, and to get these people out. But Perot did it with his own people.